study work session.
Okay, I get to stay up at the...
Keep in mind that the Commonwealth Attorney is in the audience.
I'll just make a few introductory comments, and then I'll be turning this over to Trevor and his team to walk you through the study. The need to renovate and expand our courts, as you know, has been an important topic of discussion for some years now. You may know that it, all the way back to 2001, we actually entered into a joint study with the city of Charlottesville, looking more broadly at all our courts. Of course, out of that study, we proceeded with the Juvenile Domestic Relations Court and now have completed that project. We're really turning our attention now to our own circuit and district court operations. So about a year ago, this board approved our moving forward with an RFP to engage a consultant, in this case, PSW Architects, who are real experts in this whole topic of court design and study. So we're real pleased to have them here. And in a moment, Trevor will introduce the team, and they'll be part of this presentation. Just by way of scope, we have talked about the need, first of all, to fully understand what are the long-term needs for the general district and court operations in terms of space needs. We also wanted to ask them to analyze, given those needs, what are our various options for considerations, whether it be downtown or elsewhere? And then lastly, given those options, what are the cost estimates for each? It was a very collaborative effort between staff and our consultants over the past several months. They've looked at county population growth issues and assumptions, which are extremely important as we consider what these needs might be in 20, 30 years from now. They looked at caseload trends and assumptions, and those are important because they don't always track with population growth. We need to make decisions and assumptions about, given a certain amount of caseload activity, how does that translate to in terms of space needs for our courts? They've looked at security and operational issues, and in that regard attempted to work with the various court users, the judges, the Commonwealth Attorney, and others, to try to gain some insight as to, as we consider different options, how might that affect their operations and functioning of the courts. We've looked at parking and storage issues, and some of which you've provided feedback yourself on some of your preferences about those things. It has not been, and I might be clear about this, it has not been an exhaustive study at this point. We're really trying to understand the critical issues that go into making decisions about the various options that we have at a broad level, and then gain your feedback and preferences about those so we can further analyze them. At this point in time, based on the study and work we've done so far, we think there are two essentially viable options to proceed with. The first is, as I think we've talked about, remaining downtown, and in that regard, expanding into the Levy Opera facility for our general district court operations. Once that's done, we would then go back into the circuit court building and renovate that to expand our circuit court operations. So that's one option. The other is this notion of moving the general district court to a county-owned facility or site, in this case in Mill Creek. So in that case, we would build a brand new courts facility at Mill Creek for general district court operations. And then we would go back later and renovate the existing Albemarle Courthouse to accommodate the expanded circuit court operation. This is what we referred to as the split operation. And again, as you'll hear, there are a number of issues around operations, but there are also a number of advantages. And I would say that about all these. There are certainly pros and cons. We'll talk about what those critical issues are, ask for your feedback and preferences as it relates to those. No decision is required today. We're just trying to gain a level of feedback from you all and focus so that as we go to the next level on this, we know just where to focus and what issues to study. So with that, I'll turn it over to Trevor.
I think Bill just took care of our presentation, so if it's okay, I think...
Hey, Tom, put his watch back on.
Yeah, when the watch comes out, I know we're running out of time. If it's okay, I thought it would be good to go through a little more detail some of the options, as well as some of the background of the analysis that was done by our consultants. As Bill mentioned, PSA Dewberry is our consultant that we brought in on this. The work actually started about 18 months ago, and so it's been kind of a long time coming. There were some periods of time where it was scheduling meetings and doing some analysis, that's kind of what has expanded the calendar time. But Dewberry comes with a great resume. They're a regional firm, a strong background with court operations, master planning, design, construction. They have projects nationwide. They've just completed design on a couple of projects. One is the Rockford Federal Court in Rockford, Illinois, and the Chatham County Courthouse in Savannah. The team, of which we have three of the four here today, is led by Jim Bate. He's the principal in charge and lead designer in the project. Jim's on the left. Meg Bauer, I guess you can figure out which one is Meg. Meg is a project manager and programmer on the project. Dave Puckett is from a local architecture firm, FPW. And then our judicial facility planner, Changmin Ming, from the National Center for States Courts, also provide a lot of the forecasting data, really the data component to this. And so the team's here to help present and answer any questions you might have. They also architected the report that was attached to the executive summary. Bill really highlighted it, but the phase of the process really was to analyze current conditions, current operating state, what are the issues, what are the concerns. That really is documented in Chapter 1. In parallel, they went and did a forecasting methodology, which Meg will talk to, just to give you a little more background on. I think it has some it's germane to the discussion about which options that we look at because some of that might be based on where you believe those numbers should be. And so that's Section 2. In addition, they developed a programming. You'll hear us talk about court sets and what that means. And that's really what defines the architectural program that you need to then, meet the court needs in the future. And then finally, it's the analysis of the options. And as Bill said, there were three specifically that were looked at. I think we're down to two. We'll detail those at a high level, but then give a chance at the end for questions that you might have on any of them. And so with that, I think I'll turn it over to Meg, if you would like to. And what I told Meg is that our goal is to get through this part of the presentation in about 8 minutes, 9 minutes, so that we give you guys plenty of time for questions. So as Tom looks at his watch, I guess we'll start on that. No pressure, Meg.
Thanks, Trevor. Okay, so my goal here is to touch on a couple of points that we felt would be the most important to help you understand some of the key decisions that were made, not at all to go into exhaustive detail. So bear with me if I gloss over something you have more interest in, and please feel free to ask at the end. But one of the most important facts or I guess features of courts that we wanted to bring out at first is that when you're looking at space related to a court, we oftentimes think of just the courtroom, but in fact, what the court is comprised of and what makes it work is a variety of ancillary spaces that surround the courtroom itself and that help to maintain security, circulation, and functionality of the court. And so this little slide here shows a few of the differences. What you have right now, and this is one of the first things we noticed when we were doing our facility evaluations, is you have courtrooms, not court sets. And what does that mean? That means you have a courtroom with no vestibule in most cases. You have chambers which may or may not be attached to the courtroom. You have no adjacent holding cells. That means inmate movement and custody movement goes in a different path that is not secure. And you have jury deliberation, but it's not immediately adjacent to the courtroom. It may be in a separate part of the building, and those jurors may need to transit through public circulation to get to the jury deliberation room. So when we're planning and designing courthouses today, we usually talk about the unit that is the court set. And that is comprised of the things that are on the right-hand side of the slide. We talk about the public areas, and that's the waiting area out in some kind of a public lobby or something like that, which might have seating. We have a sound lock vestibule usually to try to keep the noise from the public areas from getting into the courtroom. We usually have victim witness or attorney conference rooms that are pretty small, but they're usually somewhere near the entrance to the courtroom so that you can do a quick chat before you go in that's in a private space where other people can't listen. Then we have the courtroom itself. And then behind that, you have some secure areas that are usually not accessible to the general public. You would have the jury deliberation room. It's usually as close as possible to the courtroom. Typically, you don't want jurors using public restrooms, so it typically has dedicated restrooms attached. You have the chambers. In a modern courthouse now, judges typically move through secure circulation to get into the courtroom through a different path of travel than the public. And you have your holding cells for anyone who might be in custody. You might have equipment storage. You might have evidence storage for trials that last more than one day. So when we talk about the court set, this is what it is. Okay. Now I'm going to depart completely and go into the forecasting methodology. This was done, as Trevor said, by the National Center for State Courts. We built on some previous studies that were done, and we used nationally accepted methodologies for forecasting court caseload. They're based on new filings coming in per year. So we looked at the historic and projected county population, historical filings, other forecasts of caseload that you had on file from previous studies, and the National Center developed three methodologies. The linear regression is basically taking the historical pattern of the line and making some assumptions and continuing it out into the future. So it's based solely on caseload. There are debates in the court forecasting world about how valid it is to use population, but it's always interesting and it always brings new information to light. So we always like to do a ratio to population to find out what it shows. So in this case, the National Center did a ratio to county population, and they did a ratio to county plus city population. And then finally, they did a more of a traditional statistical analysis that maps a formula, a more complicated mathematical formula, onto the shape of the historical line. And it came out with an exponential smoothing or dynamic regression approach. So if you know anything about math, that probably excites you. If you don't, we're moving on. Okay, here is the resulting case forecast for the circuit court. And I don't want to go over this exhaustively, but there's a few things that I want to point out about the shapes of these lines. So you'll see the blue line is the historical data. And you can see that it has some up and down fluctuation, but if you were to try to lay a ruler along there, you can see that there's pretty much a consistent upward trend. And anyone could probably take a pen and draw that line pretty easily. And you can see that the forecast more or less follows that line. And I want to also draw your attention to the fact that the final projected points way out on the year that's marked 2030 are bunched rather tightly together. They're almost as tightly together as the bunch that's over in the 2011 point. And that's indicative that while you don't need to distinguish which forecast is which line, they were all fairly similar. And each of those forecasts had a certain agreement with the rest of the forecasts. The final point on the slide is the difference between the output given by those forecasts. And you can see that the low forecast forecasted 2761 new filings. That's over on the right where it says future growth at the very top. And the high forecast was 3019, with a difference of only about 250 filings. Again, an indication that the forecast, that the historical data was fairly easy to forecast and that the forecast was fairly consistent. Now, I do want to mention as we move this from this to space, there's a difference in what this means in the circuit court in terms of courtroom time and what it will mean in the general district court in terms of courtroom time. In other words, circuit court cases tend to take up more time per case. So 250 means more courtroom time than it would mean if it was a general district case, which might be small claims or traffic. Okay, let's go on to the next slide. This is general district. And you can see there's a lot more fluctuation, and anybody would have a little bit of a difficult time figuring out where to put your ruler and where to draw the summary line with that historical data. And depending on how much data you include, you would get a very different future picture. And in fact, that's what's shown by these different forecasts. You see different slopes, different lines, and you can see that there's a wide disparity on the right-hand end compared to what we saw with the circuit court. If you look at what that means, you can see that the difference is a lot wider. It's about 18,000 filings. Okay, again.
Do we know what percentage of those cases here are typically traffic cases in the general district court?
We do. I don't know that right off the top of my head, but we did look at that, yeah. But hold those thoughts, and I'm going to roll it forward for you. Can you click one? Thanks. We came back with these forecasts, and we began translating this into court sets, because, of course, that's the biggest measure of space. How am I doing on time?
You're good.
Good? I'm at it. I'm waiting. Okay.
2 minutes.
I'm going to go very fast. Our committee came back with three questions about sensitivity analysis. They had asked us specifically to look beyond the 2030 time window of our study and make sure that whatever solution we came up with would last beyond that window. And so they came back with three questions. How many court sets do we need in 2040 and beyond? When are we going to need another court set? And we estimated that at 0.5 and up, because you'd round that up to one courtroom. And what if we had 150,000 citizens, each possible potential scenarios? And so we moved on. This is actually a slide from a presentation we made to that committee. Those questions are listed along the top. Ignore the bottom row that says JNDR and focus right in on the circuit for a minute. And you'll see our forecast of caseload gave us between 1.51 and 1.65 judicial full-time equivalencies. We round that up to two court sets. So then we did our sensitivity analysis, and we said, how many in 2040? 1.87, it still rounds up to two. When do we need another court set? Maybe in 2070, if, of course, all those assumptions hold true and that forecast is still valid that far out. And what if there are 150 citizens? We found that you would need 1.81, also rounded up to two court sets in 2030. So for the circuit court, we found that it was a fairly sound forecast. We feel very comfortable advising that you plan for two circuit court sets and that that should last unless something major changes. General district, a little bit of a different story. 1.61 to 2.31, you could round that up to two. You could round that up to three. We met with the group, we talked about it, we looked at the sensitivity analysis, and we found that if we carried it out to 2040, we would round up to three. If we looked at when you'd need another judicial full-time equivalent based on this caseload and the current caseload ratios, it was 2060. And we found that if you got to 150,000 citizens, we would also round up to three. So our committee and we decided that we would plan for three general district court sets. And with that, I'm going to hand back over to Trevor to get to the options.
And you said you met with the committee. Who were the people that you met with?
It was the executive staff. It was Tom, Bill Bryan, Larry, myself.
I may be getting ahead of you, but were there interviews with the judges, with the Commonwealth
Attorney? In the initial phase of it, yeah. That was actually where the team started, was the documents that were provided as part of the study for background. And then they set up a series of interviews with the key stakeholders.
I think the answer is yes at the beginning and also yes at the end with the judges.
When you say interviews. at the end of later than
yes.
now?
Yes, okay. Within the last few weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, Trevor, we'll get more on that. I just want to segue before I depart. We translated all of that into a space program, as Trevor said, so we did work with the staff to figure out how much space would be needed.
So I guess at the end, you know, moving to the kind of the end of the presentation, we have done a follow-up, Bill and I, with the judges, Commonwealth Attorney, and the Sheriff's Office. I think there's more work that needs to be done. So they have seen the report. There's been some preliminary follow-up discussions. There's probably a little more work that needs to get done on that. But so I guess I'm going to jump back to the options. Bill really summarized the three, and I want to kind of get to just the two that we think have the merit to move forward with. The reason why, you know, primarily the option of moving all of the court functions to a greenfield site, we are not recommending that just because of the complexity with the referendum to move the county seat. There's a lot. I mean, it certainly is an option and something that we can talk about if the board. There's been some analysis that has been done, but we think that is a pretty high hurdle to get over. We also looked at a split option that had the general district down at this site. We felt there were some limits to how much build-out we could do down here, and even being able to construct the facility and the location that would be planned, which is the Lane baseball field, we felt would meet some pretty heavy resistance. So we felt that from a a long-term perspective from a cost, that really the two viable options are the stay downtown option or a split option where it was circuit court downtown and then a general district out to the Greenfield site. We've talked about this already. This just is a picture to kind of show what we're talking about. The thing that, and we'll talk about some considerations where I think we can weigh some pros and cons, but the downtown option allows us to basically expand in the existing historic courthouse to meet the needs of the circuit court. There's two court sets that Meg just talked about. It allows us to phase the project, probably gives us our best phasing, move the Commonwealth Attorney into the Levy Opera House that would be renovated, and then the addition would be a complete demo of what's there now, and then a new construction addition. What was done by the consultants, what's in your report, is really a maximum capacity that this site could hold. And so that's why you see a range of costs at the bottom, and that's probably what we want to talk a little bit about at the end. But if we were to build it out to, let's say, beyond the 2030, if the analysis that was done, the costs that were provided, show some extra capacity both for courtrooms and judge chambers that would allow an expansion of the courts beyond this study, the scope, what we're projecting. But really, it's the only way to accommodate future growth of the courts in 2070, 2080, 2090, And so that really is what it reflects this program. And it should also worth noting that this is really just a conceptual plan. There are other options. There are other things that we could do from a configuration of this site and these buildings to allow even a more phased approach. And so we can talk in a little more detail about that at the end of the presentation. But the cost to, compare it to what we're looking at in the split option are relatively about the same, minus parking and then the disposition of the levy. This option, we've looked at it.
What do you mean, in disposition of the levy? You mean?
Meaning that you potentially have some sale proceeds. And so that you would not have, obviously, if you were occupying the levy. That's the only difference. From a parking perspective.
Just so I understand, what you're talking about is if you stayed downtown, building out the levy, so in effect you would be building additional space that you don't need now in recognition of the fact that beyond 2030 you may need the space and it would be impossible to do it. Extremely expensive back in.
It would be more expensive to do it in a phased way, unless there were some other things that could happen, such as acquiring the adjacent property, given a little more footprint. There may be some things there that would allow that.
Those would require that we add another cost component.
Yeah.
So to make them comparable, we really had to assume we could have as much long-term space downtown as we could have out at Mill Creek. So you had to, in essence, add another floor. The trick in this whole study was a study, looking at a period from 2012 to 2030, by the time you finish the construction, you got a 14-year period or something. So we didn't want to do that in such a way that was too short-sighted.
Sure.
Obviously, the architects would say, well, you also have to be careful about planning so far out because you can't predict the future. And this is the challenge that we were faced with. That's why we pushed it to 2040, and that's why we had this whole conversation about do we just go forward with a 15-year solution or do we really need to allow more than that? And so that's the trick here in the cost difference that he's talking about.
Is that extra space potentially leasable?
We've talked about
practical matter. If you've got courts in a building, is it practically feasible to? You're talking about the upper floor.
It would be on the in this case on the third level, which would be probably difficult to do for a commercial operation, especially with the security concerns I think that we would have.
So on this downtown option, that's why you see that range. It's on the lower end of cost. It is really building out to what we think would be necessary in 2030. If you build it out to its full capacity, then it's the higher number. The Mill Creek, the split option, the downtown courthouse, the circuit court renovation is the same cost assumptions. What would be done would be a new construction project at the property that's south of the Monticello Fire Station. In this scenario, it would be envisioned that the sheriff's office would locate out to this site, this facility. A Commonwealth attorney potentially could move into that vacated space, but some of that work would have to be analyzed and studied to see if that fit would work. In the cost estimate for this option, we looked at really what would the needs be at the 2030 time frame. So that, you know, two large court sets and one medium to meet the three court set. Again, that is really looking at what would be needed in that 2030 build out, given the forecasting that Meg talked about. We reviewed this with the judges and the sheriff and the Commonwealth attorney over the past couple of weeks. This just highlights some of the comments that we heard from them. Certainly, there is a strong preference to remain downtown, and I think that saying that's your preference is a true statement. We have done some research within the Commonwealth just to see, what is the common, how common or uncommon is this? And actually, Attachment B gives you a list of the, the areas, courts throughout the Commonwealth. And if my number is right, it's 7 of the 118 have what we would call a split operation, meaning, the distance between the buildings are half mile or more. So we call that not walkable. And so really, there is an example or several examples within the state where the split operation exists, but it's certainly not common. The other concerns.
City of Falls Church is about the same distance as you would have here. It's five and a half miles. Does anybody, do we know how they came about to have a split court situation, and
I don't know
whether
that
or not they've experienced.
Jim, do you want to hop up?
Functional issues with that?
That's certainly one of the things we'd propose to look at in more detail.
Yes, again, I'm Jim Bate. By coincidence, we're actually working with the City of Falls Church right now. They're facing similar issues in terms of space shortages, not just for their courts, but the administration functions as well. The district court was set up really as a convenience to the City of Falls Church populace. They really have their courts based in Arlington County Courthouse. And once a week, they will hold a traffic court in the city, in basically the chamber space where the city holds their meetings, really, again, just as a convenience to the local populace. And that's so they backed into it, I guess, is the best way to describe that.
So they have a general district court in both locations, actually, as well. They have a circuit court.
They have the potential to be able to do it in both locations, yes.
Yeah.
But the primary courthouse is the Arlington County Courthouse. And that's where the judges reside, and they just come over for the day to hear the cases in the morning, maybe into the early afternoon for traffic court.
Further review of how these other 7 have overcome any obstacles is what we would do next, if you all think that is still a viable option for us to pursue further. So we are really recommending, if you think we should leave that on the table, that we do some more of that work and work again with the Commonwealth attorney and the judges to talk about some of the ways that some obstacles may be able to be overcome, or perhaps there won't be good solutions to that. But that's going to take some more review.
One question for your future questions answered file would be, do the judges routinely operate in both circuit and general district, or are they attached to one or the other, in which case being at one place or the other for the whole day may not be as material for them? And the Commonwealth attorney, I would guess, would probably be in both, but that kind of information would be helpful to me too.
There's a quick answer to that. I don't know if is that they don't work in both circuit and general district. They work in one or the other.
The judges.
They do work, some of them back up the city court sometimes, though, if in the same court. General district might back up city county. I don't think that's a very frequent thing, but I'll let you all correct me if I'm wrong. But
and where there really are issues are around the issue of security, and the Commonwealth attorney, of course, serves both. So that
those were the primary concerns about the operations. It's kind of splitting those resources amongst a couple of locations, the sheriff's department and the Commonwealth attorney. The impact that would have then on the ability to schedule their dockets and be dynamic in that scheduling. So those are some of the concerns that were raised that need some further vetting. There's also an issue potentially with the state funding the an additional judge. And I think there is a study currently going on. Larry may know a little more about where they're, I believe, doing an analysis of how the state is currently resourced and what their caseloads are and you know, just a complete resource review of that that functioning.
Trevor, what are your considerations for the attorneys themselves?
Support.
They have to come to the courthouses. Yeah.
Yeah, that would be. You know, you're right. That's an additional impact. I guess the focus of this really was more on the court functioning. But, you know, the other concern would be the support services. The attorneys would also have to, manage their time.
With the option of staying all, keeping them all downtown, there's obviously going to be a lot of remodeling that would have to go on. And I'm just curious about whether how much you're factoring in the disruption to the courts during all that construction and shifting things around and on. And she's talking about court sets, and it sounds like we want to modernize the court at the same time.
The sequencing, let's start with the
That's got to be expensive and disrupting, too.
That is accounted for in our cost estimates. The sequencing really would be to start the if it were to stay downtown, would be to start the Levy project first, renovate to get the Commonwealth Attorney out. That frees up some space within the current facility now to give a little more headroom, if you will. Moving on to the addition, basically build that court sets that would allow the general district to move out, and then you would go back and renovate within the historic court set. So that, at a high level, that would be the sequencing. I think one of the recommendations is that we look, and we really try to detail that out more, can understand the impacts. There may be a way to, I guess at the end of the day, maybe it would cost more, but there may be a way that you would phase it in so that it incrementally would cost less and you could actually get started to work earlier. Those are some things that we'd need to look at. If it is the split option, I think the option there is you have to go out and get your new construction project done first. And so you really take on that general district and then we can relocate the court services there.
Furthering that whole thought, though, it seems to me like that you, particularly in the old building, the old courthouse building, that you're going to run into structural problems there. You're going to run into, remember when we did the juvenile court, we had the wall fall down.
Yes. Yeah, that,
And it appears to me there's going to be an awful lot more difficult to do.
Ken, that's a question I know I've asked the consultant several times, especially given our experience with the JNDR. They brought in one of their expert cost estimators that factored in to their numbers to account for that risk. There's a little higher risk level from a contingency perspective. Mm-hmm. I favored the topic for the downtown option. But even then, anytime you're in that environment, especially if it's a historic building renovation and you're talking about an addition, a tear down and addition, that's a concern. So that certainly, there may be liabilities beyond what we're predicting. Do you all want to jump up and
just so
talk
I understand,
about that?
You're gonna be renovating the circuit court building anyway, either way, right?
Either way.
Right, so it's not, what you're talking about is the Levy building.
Right.
Yeah,
not the circuit court. So
you're right. That's a good point. That's consistent in both options, unless the board was to entertain a complete relocation.
And what mitigates a little bit of the premium cost is the fact that with Levy, you're taking down a substantial portion of what's there and rebuilding new. The only real portion of what would be rebuilt or renovated would be the Opera House itself.
Not taking that down. You're talking
about
building
that would
around
remain.
It,
that's the piece that would be renovated,
stuff.
But
okay.
the annex building, which is a 2 or 3 story building, that would completely come down and start over again. So,
could you comment also on parking? If you keep both courts downtown, what type of parking would we have? I thought I saw a parking garage. Is that a real option?
That's a good question and one that we've struggled with. The way we've approached this is to provide an allowance for a parking deck or some solution for parking, and in this case, $3 million. The challenge is that we don't know exactly how that would be accomplished. We don't know, for example, that we could provide a parking deck on site. I think that would be challenging, if not impossible. We also don't know immediately in the area of the court where we would build a deck, if such a deck would be approved by the city. Of course, if there is capacity right now in the city's deck. So getting a public deck, another one built, I think would be a challenge.
Where does that come from, that capacity at the East Market Street deck information? Because multiple times when I've tried to go to small claims, there's been nothing on the street and nothing at parking deck. And that's just one anecdotal response. But when you're looking at 20 more years,
I don't have the precise numbers for you, but I can tell you from the anecdotal work and inquiries that we have made about a recent parking study that the city is reporting some capacity in both the Water Street and the Market Street deck.
I think particularly when you put them together, there's capacity. The question's about this convenience to the courts, I think, is...
Water Street's a pretty good, like...
Yeah,
that's right. Somebody has walking problems of some kind.
So if you split the courts and take one out south of town, how does that help with the parking downtown with the remaining court there? Would you have additional parking at that point over at the Levy side, or you'd still have parking problems in that area? But then, of course, if you move one court out, that would cut the parking needs by probably 2/3.
Yes, and I think the thinking is there, too, that the general district court operation is your high-volume court operation, right. So that you would be mitigating a lot of the parking concerns downtown.
Dennis referred to it as the retail operation of the courts, if you will, just because of the activity.
It may be even more, because you'd be moving the clerk's office and the Commonwealth Attorney's office, the sheriff's office, and all that would move to the new court, wouldn't it?
Not necessarily. I think the sheriff's office would relocate, but the Commonwealth Attorney would likely stay downtown. And so, again, that's a piece of the puzzle that needs to get.
Sure. You'd have to accommodate some offices for those two constitutional officers at both places. Wouldn't be a complete new office, obviously, but some place for them to work at.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if Trevor's done his presentation. I know we have at least two stakeholders on that aforementioned list here, and I'd like, before we have a full deliberation on this, to at least have the benefit of their input. And I have it on good authority that the 20% of the 16th Judicial Circuit Court bench needed to leave about half an hour ago. And so if there's any input back there, if you're done, Trevor, I don't want to rush
really,
you on your presentation.
It's down to the considerations that I think tries to weigh some of the pros and the cons. And really, it's at the point of questions for the architects, consultants, or others. So it's,
I think we did provide you with some summary in the executive summary, which basically kind of indicated that the range was between $5 and $15 million of difference, and that five was really the cost of building parking downtown, which we're not real confident we can build, as we just told you, and then $2 million, which is what we would expect generally to get from proceeds if we sold Levy, and that would be without building the extra floor, if you will, for long term. If we built that, it bumps it up to 15. But those are the critical fiscal impact numbers, and the thing we've left you with is the operational issues are things we got to do some more work on. But parking was a big deal to you all, so we just wanted to make sure we clarified to you that range and what was included in there. I also ask you all, did we factor in the cost of purchasing Levy from the city in our high end? Okay, so if we wanted Levy, and Larry, you can correct me from the agreement, we would have to buy the city out probably about $2 million, like we would sell it and on the market. So that's another factor I guess we'd have to add that I just realized we probably didn't. We added it to the savings on the low end, but didn't add it to the cost on the high end if we stayed downtown. So.
Thank you very much. Let's invite Judge Higgins to come, and since we've held you up here, we'll get your comments and then come back for our discussion after you and our Commonwealth Attorney have had a chance to let us know.
I want to begin by thanking you for hearing me. And to answer one of the questions that was asked, the General District Court Judge and the Circuit Court Judges do not switch benches, but I don't want that to leave you with the impression that we do not share resources. And that is a huge concern of mine as a Circuit Court Judge. And we share resources in several ways. First of all,
pull that a little closer to you so we can get you better. Thank you.
Thank you. So we share resources in various ways. One of the ways is interpreters, because in this day and time, we frequently use Spanish interpreters. People will come into court, especially in a circuit court, and think they know enough English that they can function. But when you start talking about your waiver of self-incrimination, when you start talking about a right of habeas corpus, you can tell that people really are not understanding what their rights are. And I now can call the General District Court, since they operate 5 days a week and the Circuit Court operates 5 days a week, and say, do you have a Spanish interpreter? And if they do, they can send the interpreter over, because it's right within walking distance. And it doesn't delay the docket, and I don't have to then pay additional monies for an interpreter in terms of costs of having them travel back and forth. And then there's just the basic convenience of the court system and the cases that the court hears between the two of us. For example, generally, bond hearings will be held in general district court. If the defendant or the Commonwealth does not like the ruling on the bond hearing, it can be appealed. That means that the entire case is heard de novo in front of the circuit court. Where you have courts that are within walking distance, the attorneys will frequently call Ms. Hodges and ask her, can I hear the case? And I am glad to make time to do so. And by everyone being in such close proximity, the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, the Sheriff's Department, the defendant, the lawyers, that means that witnesses only have to come one time. We just move them from one court. I can go ahead and hear the case. We don't have the additional issue of transporting a defendant out and then having to transport the defendant back. I brought with me my criminal docket today because I think it helps shows part of the point that I'm making. And as you can tell, I've got a case at 9:30, 9 o'clock, 9:30, 10 o'clock, two cases at 10 o'clock, 10:30, 11 o'clock, 11:30, 12, 2, 2:30, 3:30, two cases at 4 and at 4:30. We are trying very hard to run this docket as efficiently as possible. And while 30 minutes may seem like a long time, the first case on the docket today involves someone that committed a sexual offense against an 8-year-old child. You can imagine the victim impact and the sentencing guidelines and the time that these kinds of cases take. Another case is someone where the victim is asking for $45,000 in restitution, which is a private business. Someone else is at Western State, and they have had some issues. There was someone else we had to take a recess for, and I could still hear him yelling in the hallway, even with my door closed. So these are not the routine traffic cases where you hear something and you make a decision. So when I have to make room for a bond hearing, if I can do it quickly, it's easy to work it in. If I have to try to figure out a schedule of somebody's in general district court, they didn't plan to have a Commonwealth's attorney in circuit court today, making sure there's a sheriff's deputy that can transport, what time can they get them there, that becomes hugely problematic. Not only is it problematic for bond hearings, but it also becomes problematic if I have an emergency. And I'll just give you an example of an unforeseeable emergency that might come up. There was a defendant that was charged with assaulting someone, and he was not ordered as part of the magistrate's bond not to have contact with them. Well, the police get a telephone call that to respond to a call that he's actually come over to her, I think to her residence, and there's been drinking involved. When the police got there, as I recall, they found glass boxes that were broken because things had been thrown. It turned out those boxes contained snakes, and I think they were boa constrictors. So in the midst of trying to straighten out what's happening between the parties, the officers are having to keep an eye out for snakes. And I was asked, can I please have a bond hearing to order him not to have any contact with her? And I will tell you off the record that I will make as a personal priority anyone that wants to deal with a bond hearing regarding snakes in a residence. So I said yes. And again, we already have the Commonwealth's Attorney's Office, if they're in general district court, if they're in juvenile court, they're within walking distance, we can easily resolve the issue, and it really does make a huge difference. As I stated earlier, both courts are operating at the same time. While there may not be defendants or an emergency that come up, we do have lawyers that are going back and forth. And there are times when I will say to Judge Barkley, okay, I've got a huge civil case. I've got one lawyer that has to be in your court at 9 o'clock. Every other lawyer and witness can be in my court at 9 o'clock. Can I have him appear in my court first, and I'll send him over? Judge Barkley will say, fine. It becomes more hugely problematic, even just driving 15, 20 minutes when you're talking about a docket where I'm trying to set cases every 30 minutes to make sure that everybody gets heard, but I'm running the court as efficiently as possible. I understand the mathematical calculations for how many judges will be needed in the future, but I sincerely question whether or not the General Assembly, in light of the current trends, will actually fund those positions. I think Judge Barkley's been on the bench for 23 years, and even with his caseload, we have one general district court judge. And I think there was some question, since Judge Morton is retiring, about what will happen with that particular position. I find it highly unlikely that we're going to have two other general district court judges appointed in the next 20 years. I'm just afraid that we would be spending money on a courtroom that literally we would not have a judge to use. Circuit court, I view as being the same way. I do not recall how long Judge Petras was on the bench, but I will, let's say, conservatively 15 years. I've been there for six. We've had one circuit court judge. I do not anticipate we're going to be getting a second circuit court judge. And with the facilities that I have now, I mean, it does work. We have designated judges. We've got room for them if we need to. We're making changes to where we put the jury. So I think that there are other considerations in terms of the actual operation of the court that I hope you will consider significantly. And maybe when looking at what is actually needed, that the reality of how many judges will we likely have and will we really need three courtrooms as opposed to maybe two courtrooms should be a consideration. And I noticed that their first recommendation was that you get community involvement, and I would really ask you to do so. I am a circuit court judge, and I admit that I am concerned about my court and having the best court possible. Other people may not share my views. I do have a letter, though, from the Public Defender's Office about their views. And before money is spent on more studies and what things are cost, I think the perspective of the community really does and should be heard. So, Mr. Lettieri, if I can give this to you.
Do you have any thoughts, Judge Higgins? Do you have any thoughts on the parking issue? Seems to be one of the biggest differentials between the two locations.
I just want to make sure the press wasn't here. I would have nerve to comment about
over there. Just wanted to let you know.
Thank you. Okay, now I have to rephrase and think about it.
Held that back a little bit.
I want to say what I was going to say, and that is I would have a lot of nerve to comment about parking because I do have a parking space. So I acknowledge that for me, parking is not an issue, but it is an issue downtown. I don't know what the distance is from I don't know how to respond to that. Parking is an issue. I don't know how big the parking lot is at the county office building, and I was wondering what the distance is between the back of the parking lot to the county office building and from the Market Street parking garage to the courthouse. But I don't have to walk it, and I acknowledge it's a problem.
You don't have a lot of people getting there late for their appointed time because they couldn't find a place to park. I mean, if you'd been told that many times, that would be some information that you have.
No, not at all.
All right, thank you.
No. I have a lot of other excuses for why they do not appear in court on time, but most of those involve memory and not parking.
Well, one of the things we need to keep in mind is that most of the attorneys are downtown, that they're in court
anyway.
Frequently, and
yeah.
They're walking, but they would be actually driving out and parking if they had to attend court at Mill Creek. Right. So you actually would need more parking there, albeit cheaper parking to acquire.
Yeah. Not to mention the inconvenience associated with that. I've had cases, right. I've had days when I've had a case in circuit court and a case in general district court, and I was able to go back and forth, and that would be an option that would come off the table, obviously.
Well, do you park in the Market Street garage usually when you...
Usually I can find street parking.
Yeah.
Get there at 6 in the morning. It's a possibility. Right. Thank you very, very much.
You're welcome.
Ms. Lunsford?
Hi. Good afternoon. Thank you. Well, we do have to sort of follow up on your last question about parking. I've noticed fewer concerns about parking and complaints about finding a place to park. But what we often have is someone who comes into Albemarle General District Court when they're supposed to be in City General District Court, or vice versa. And it's very easy when someone comes to City General District Court and they're supposed to be in the county to go, you go up the hill and they're only 10 minutes late as opposed to a half an hour late as they would be if they were out somewhere else. I think one of the things that Judge Higgins was saying that is most important to me, one of the things that Mr. Hensley said in his letter to Mr. Lettieri, and one of the things that Lloyd Snook, who is the president of the Bar Association, emailed to me today, and he couldn't be here, is what Cheryl said last, and that is the desire that we be involved in and consulted about what's going to happen in a facility that we will use. With all due respect, unless you guys get a traffic ticket, you're not going to be there. So you don't use it on a day-to-day basis. And there has been some consulting with us early on and during the course of the court study, and I think it was actually a couple years ago, if not longer, that it was started. I was included in the meetings and, you know, tried to go as much as I could, if not every meeting. And then there came a time when I wasn't included anymore for some reason, and it just sort of fell off. We did get an update from Mr. Lettieri last week, and we very much appreciated that. We also got a copy of the court study last week. The court study was dated September, and we saw it last week and got a copy of it after asking for it, after having asked for it repeatedly. I don't want to sound bitter or like I'm complaining, but so much, but there's a lot of questions that were being asked of Trevor that Trevor doesn't have the answer to, and that these people back here don't have the answer to. With all due respect, we have more information than either Trevor or the professionals do with respect to a lot of this, specifically as it relates to how the building is used. And so we, and by we, I mean the people that actually live and work in that courthouse, as well as the members of the bar and the members of the public, would appreciate being consulted on this and included in the process before a decision is made in the summer of 2013 about what's going to happen. And we sort of feel like we've been left out of the process to a large extent. For example, one of the things that was brought up today was the potential of relocating my office, should there be a building at Mill Creek, to the Sheriff's Department, the current Sheriff's Department. That's not in the report that was presented to us last week. It's the first I've heard of it. So where you locate my office is pretty important to me. Where you locate the Sheriff's office is going to be pretty important to the Sheriff, and yet that's the first that I've heard of it, and I would assume Chip probably hasn't even heard of it, and he just moved into his space within the past 3 or 4 years. The issue of how we split our time is something that I brought up at the meeting the other day when Bill was there, and I suggested that if they really want to know how we operate on a day-to-day basis, that someone come spend a week with us, because that's the only way they're really going to figure out how this space is utilized and how we work and how we work cooperatively together. Judge Higgins gave a couple of examples, and I want to add a couple. On Monday, we had docket call in circuit court. Docket call means that I think on Monday we had probably 30 officers who had to testify before the grand jury. We had 7 grand jurors there. We had, I don't know, maybe 100 people, citizens, who were there to schedule their cases. And when I say citizens, I'll include lawyers in that. All in circuit court, which Judge Higgins starts at 9 o'clock. At 9 o'clock, I had a case in General District Court in Albemarle County involving an Albemarle County police officer who was pleading guilty to a crime. I had to be the one to handle that. I'm also the one who handles docket call. I could be two places at one time. I sent an email to Judge Higgins on Thursday saying I've got something in general district court at 9 o'clock tomorrow, Monday morning, if you'll just give me a few minutes. I was no more than 5 minutes late to docket call because Judge Barkley knew that I had docket call, took me first, and allowed me to go next door. The same thing happens on a Tuesday afternoon when we have traffic docket. And part of this has to do with our specialization in our office that we do to have things run more efficiently. Darby Lowe, who is my deputy, handles juvenile court cases. She also handles traffic docket on Tuesday afternoon. Juvenile court detention hearings occur at 1:30 on Tuesday afternoon when she's in general district court. But she can be in two places at one time by organizing or coordinating with Judge Barkley and asking him, can he call an officer's cases that don't involve the Commonwealth for a few minutes while she literally runs across the street to juvenile court, which we won't be able to do if we are physically separated. Issues of security, issues of jury rooms and how many we need and whether we need soundproof chambers and things of that nature are all things that we would like to have input on, and all things that I think, and I think that the judge is gone now, but I think she would probably agree, we can talk about in terms of what expense is really needed. We've been following the general district court judgeships, the circuit court judgeships for years. I mean, frankly, we've been begging for another general district court judge for years. And back in the day when the Commonwealth had money, we didn't get it. I seriously doubt that at this point they're going to decide to give us an additional judge when there's actually a question now as to whether or not they're going to replace Judge Morton, who retires, and he may have already retired. And if he doesn't get replaced, it's going to put we're going to have even fewer judges than we have now because our judges are going to be riding the circuit. So I think the overriding concern is that we be consulted, that we be informed, that we be included in the process, and that we not be advised at the last minute that the board is making a determination tonight and we haven't had any input. And one other thing on that process, I have kind of talked to other Commonwealth's attorneys across the state who have gotten new courtrooms and new courthouses about how it worked out and whether or not they were consulted. By and large, the Commonwealth's attorneys, the courts, the sheriffs are not consulted. And along the lines of something I heard, it may not have been Trevor, someone say earlier in an earlier presentation about change orders and the amount of change orders and the requirements for change orders. One of the concerns that the Commonwealth's attorneys expressed related to them not having been consulted. So they would go into a bright, shiny new courtroom and find that it was totally unworkable based on how court typically proceeded, because they'd never been consulted about how that judge, that courtroom works. And so change orders had to be submitted and things torn out and redone. We feel like we can actually save money if we're consulted in the process.
So one of the things I'm hearing from both you and Judge Higgins, and it certainly is true about judicial resources, and is that simply looking at, you know, simply looking at caseloads and saying that here you're going to have another judge and here you're going to have another judge, it's not the way it has gone in
That's
the
right.
past. And so it's not reality. And so, you know, one of the things that we certainly need to be considering here is the extent to which we're planning for space based upon a linear progression of some kind that may not actually be needed simply because we will not get the
right.
judges.
If you looked at the numbers,
or
we already have a new
judge. Or the additions to the Commonwealth
judge.
Attorney's Office.
Exactly.
Can I ask Denise, I know your office has a certain number of FTEs that are recommended by the comp board, and I think it's 8 or something like that, or 7.
We have 9 now.
And how much funding, not how much funding do you get, but how much funding should you get under the formulas based on felony sentencing events, based on all that stuff?
I should have at least one additional attorney according to the staffing standards.
And that's been hanging out there for a while now? A
couple of years. Since I've been in office.
Okay, so for 8 years, there's been another full-time employee that the office should have that the General Assembly is not funded, essentially.
Well, the other thing is whether, as we're going through this process, the thing that she mentioned about change orders, I think, is an appropriate comment in the sense that by making certain that we are including people pretty heavily in what it is we're planning to build, we may find we could save money simply because we are planning to do things that they say, no, you really don't need that. But, you know, and so...
I'm questioning as I listen to them talk, how soon do we need this court system?
Right. Yeah, if you're not going to have... and that's, I guess, the question is, how acute is the need for additional space today?
Well, there is a need for additional circuit courtrooms because what we do is we have many days we have two circuit court judges. Sometimes we have three. We only have one circuit court judge that is full-time in Albemarle County. But because of her caseload, we can often get substitute judges. Right now, all we have in terms of an additional courtroom is one upstairs courtroom. And she was telling me the other day, I can't remember exactly the reason why, but there have been a lot of days over the course of the past months, if not years, that she's actually had three courts running. So we'll have two criminal courts and one civil court, and the civil court will actually meet upstairs in judges' chambers, which is handicapped accessible, but our little courtroom upstairs is not handicapped accessible. So there is the issue of, you know, even though we don't have an additional circuit court judge that is dedicated to Albemarle County, we're able to get state funds to have another judge sit on occasion. That's not the case with general district court. We can't get a substitute general district court judge and run two courtrooms. For one thing, we don't have the space to do that. So
I guess the question is whether you could build for you could actually simply do an addition on the existing circuit court building to add a relatively small amount of space that is needed, you know, that would take care of the next 5 to 10 years. Just a thought. Instead of a grand plan that's going to cost $50 million that may end up building space that to accommodate judges
that will never
prosecutors that we're not even going to have.
No, we have, Judge Higgins has made efforts with the county over the course of the past 3 years to do some things like add a very small courtroom outside the general district courtroom that can be used to accommodate hearings or, you know, just very small events, maybe about 10 people in the courtroom. So she has made inroads there. The bigger problem is I can think of a couple of examples over the course of the next few months leading up through the summer where we have two jury trials scheduled at the same time. And these are criminal cases. These are my cases that have to be tried within a certain period of time. We don't have the luxury of going, well, we'll just continue this one for a while. We can do that now. But to say that having a jury trial in the upstairs little courtroom is intimate is probably putting too nice a word to it. The space for the 12 jurors is less than the space between the ends of these two tables. And that's to sit for God knows how long until they get released to the jury room, which is...
And I would say, in spite of the issues we still need to work on, I don't believe that staff or the court staff or the consultants would be in a position of saying, we don't think we need to do something.
I think that's true.
That we tried to approach this was because we did listen to the things that they said, and we certainly need a lot more. We're not in the design process, so we're going to need to have them very involved going forward, depending on direction you give us, is that there is a need for some space. And while we might have come to you before getting some final feedback from them with a number that said 10 to 15 million, we said, let's just assume that all the issues about never getting a judge are true. So we pushed that to a range that said the minimum is that we do need to have at least another courtroom. And I think, so the point here is some of those issues are valid depending on where you go, and that's why we did a range that said the minimum additional cost, if we just do the least amount, which is planning for that 15-year period, is there's at least gonna be another court needed in both places.
Yeah.
And we may not get a judge to fill it, I guess, but I think everybody would agree we need more space.
Right.
Which would be that $5 million difference.
Better to have a courtroom and no judge than a judge and no courtroom.
Right. I agree with Tom.
So it's a minimum.
I don't think anybody's saying that we don't need to do something. We do need to do something. The thing is, do we need to build, would I like to be in a bright, sparkling new building? I mean, to some extent I would. But there is a convenience factor and a reality factor that exists in being in this courtroom and in this courthouse and in this location downtown, not just for me, but for the sheriff, for the defense attorneys, for the public defender's office, for the other attorneys in town who do the same thing. I mean, we had this whole, courtroom shuffle going on. We have that happening every day. And I went up yesterday to Judge Higgins' court and to hear a case at 3:00, and she said, as soon as we got there, y'all need to know that I'm running behind. I'm 30 minutes late, so y'all can come back in 30 minutes. I mean, that's great. I can go downstairs, do email, work, talk to people, and get things done and come back in 30 minutes, as opposed to my 30 minutes would be eaten up traveling back and forth between offices.
How would you feel if there was a complete court area built on the south side of town where both courts were there? And parking and, mm-hmm. Everything that you need mm-hmm. all in one complex.
I have a couple of responses to that. One goes back to a conversation that I had with Richard yesterday, who told me that he would hold me personally responsible if courts got moved out of downtown. So from a harmony in my home perspective, I really wouldn't like that. But on a very serious note, one, there's a referendum required to move the county seat, and I think you're going to find that you will have a lot of opposition to that in terms of moving that circuit court, not just from Judge Higgins, but from a lot of people in the area. Another thought I have is I've been to the Enrico County Court Complex, and it's what you say. It's out in Enrico County. I think it's off Parham Road or something. And it has the sheriff's office and maybe even the jail and all the courtrooms out there, and it's great. I can't find a place to park out there, and it takes me longer to walk from the parking garage there to find whatever I'm looking for than it would someone to walk from the parking garage downtown up to the courthouses. The other thought is, and this is sort of on a personal level for lawyers and people who practice in that building, there's a huge, and we discussed this with the architects actually a year or so ago, there's a huge emotional attachment to that building, and it has very little to do with Thomas Jefferson and more to do with just the history of the building, the history of the people who have practiced there. And I think more than anything, the referendum that would be required to move that county seat would be a substantial undertaking.
Thank you.
Sure.
I would just again to clarify, because we're just trying to get some direction from you, we in considering all the comments that I think you've heard from the courts today, without building extra floors and all those kinds of things, we think a minimum cost difference downtown versus Mill Creek is $5 million. That is assuming you built a parking garage. We're not sure we're actually going to build a parking garage if we can actually get it done. If you're comfortable with not providing the same level of convenient parking as we could do at Mill Creek, which is one thing you all were very strong about in some initial comments, then that $3 million might not be there, and the $2 million would probably be the cost we'd have to buy the city out on to stay downtown. But again, we've given you a range that says if we didn't pursue it anymore and all the comments that you heard today were the ones that drove the decision, we still think there'd be a $5 million decision difference here. But at the high end, it's much higher, and we're not sure it's realistic either. That's why we kind of did the range.
What I'm hearing is that the space proposal that we're looking at may be too aggressive.
Only if you go to the $15 million dollar difference.
Whether there is a much more modest proposal that takes care of adding two courtrooms perhaps that doesn't do a lot of these other things, it might be much less than the 40-some million to 50-some million that we're looking at.
But we've got a safety issue that ought to be addressed also in this, whatever.
I think our consultants could actually, they might be the best to comment on security concerns and things like that, even if we went with the minimums.
The $5 million difference assumes that we do phase the downtown district court operation. We only start with two courts, and then we phase a third one later.
I thought, do you mean additions to the current facility? Yeah, so that's a very different kind of question. And
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if that's been like that.
And they've done
a lot less expensive.
They've done a very thorough evaluation. They've looked at the site. They could probably tell you whether that's even realistic on the current site. But we're talking about adding now to the current historic facility.
I do want to speak out of order because I want to say something, but y'all were talking about safety and security, and that's something that is, you know, obviously on everyone's mind, but I actually had a conversation with Judge Higgins about that earlier. It started out with her asking me if I had seen the part in y'all's report, all due respect, where it says that there is an escort of the circuit court judge by deputies from her chambers to the courtroom, and she asked me if I'd noticed her invisible escort when I saw her in the hallway yesterday. Safety is a concern, and it's more of a concern in my view. It's more of a concern in theory than it is in reality. And the reason I say that is I had a long conversation not long after I took office with one of the sheriff's deputies because Mr. Camblos had, bulletproof glass. And reflecto film on it so that you couldn't see in the office when you passed by, and the glass was bulletproof. And I wanted it taken down because I couldn't see whether it was night or day outside. And I had a long conversation with one of the deputies, and we compromised that we would leave the bulletproof glass up and take the reflecto stuff down so I could see what the weather was. But the upshot of that conversation, from my perspective, was if it makes you, the sheriff's deputy, and Chip feel better that I have bulletproof glass in my office, leave the bulletproof glass up. The person who wants to kill me can wait outside and get me when I come outside the building. It's a concern, but the judge's point on that was her concern about safety is more from the domestic docket than it is from the criminal docket. And there's always going to be that concern. And if someone really wants to bring harm to someone who works in this system, they can catch me at ACAC or at the Starbucks much more easily than they can catch me in my office.
And some, I think, safety amongst plaintiffs and defendants, and you know, when people all have to sit in the same confined space and they're on opposite sides of a domestic violence concern. That is very uncomfortable for people.
It is uncomfortable, and sometimes that can be addressed with the number of bailiffs that you have in the court. I mean, you can never have a situation where you don't have the victim in the same courtroom with a defendant. Well, you can rarely have that because of the right to confront your accusers.
Right.
Thank you.
This security issue is one we probably should do more work on in terms of education about why our consultants have given us an opinion that we need to do some things. We're going to have to do some things anyways and spend some money. It's one of the reasons we wanted to make sure we took a step back before we invested sort of short-term.
I think you've heard a lot of questions that we didn't know to ask before about intermediate steps for the downtown, the adding, and it may be completely impossible, but what came to my mind was adding a courtroom that either side, you know, circuit or district court could use when they have two jury trials going at the same time or something. And each of us could come up with great ideas, but that's a waste of time. You need to have a chance to answer that kind of question and come back to us another day.
I think Jim's got some input.
Maybe a quick comment from Jim would.
Yeah, a couple of comments. First is on the appointment of the judge. We were actually using more of a term of full-time equivalent. We realized that it's difficult to get somebody appointed, but as was stated by the Commonwealth Attorney and both Judge Higgins, though even though they may not have two circuit court judges residing in the courthouse, they already currently operate at times two circuit courts. And so, you know, that is what's really driving the forecast is the operations of the facility and what they should have versus sort of what they're makeshifting with right now. And then the security questions, we certainly take that very seriously. And there can be tremendous provisions made to the existing building that would improve the security of it. Clearly, a brand new building is going to be optimal but we can get the existing building to be fairly close to it with the proper investments in the structure and the exterior enclosure, as well as operational procedures that the sheriff can and has implemented.
I kind of agree to a great extent with what Denise said about security. Not that you shouldn't think about security, but when Oklahoma City occurred, all of a sudden you had to have barricades in front of every federal building, and you know, presumption is that somebody wants to blow up every federal building in the country. And so we've literally spent billions and billions, probably $100 billion, on federal facilities, making sure they were set back with the Social Security hearing buildings where nobody would, in their right mind, would come to blow up. Because, you know, it's like we always jump. And if you really want to get somebody, you don't have to get them inside that secure building. So I don't know. I mean, you can certainly spend a whole lot of money on security, whether or not, if you look at the actual incidences of courtroom violence, I don't know how high they are. I mean, we can go down the road of movie theater. I mean, I'm not suggesting you don't need a place to bring prisoners in, et cetera, I think you could spend a whole lot of money for a very little net gain if you're not careful.
The other question that was asked about the opportunities to expand the existing courthouse, it's very limited. There's a potential for some expansion to the rear of the historic courthouse, but we're pretty much of the assumption, I would think you would agree, that the large park with the statues and memorials is probably sacred ground. I don't think that we'd be able to build on that. So there's some opportunity for a little bit of expansion of the building, but to think that there's any sort of aggressive opportunity to make the building, the complex on the court site right now, much bigger than it is probably unrealistic and would meet pretty stiff opposition.
There's going to be opposition to about anything, as you heard.
Yes.
So there may not be much opposition to going across the street in the Levy Building, tearing it down and renovating it and so forth. I mean, we can look again. Is there any way to do anything on the current site? I think they're saying we've looked at that. It's very difficult.
We have.
General District Court can move across the street. We've told you basically it's $5 million if you want convenient parking, and we have to buy out the city on that. But we have to make some decision on the disposition of Levy at some point, whether that's to put it on the market or to keep it for the other purpose. But we've gotten some input from you today that we can use and take back. I guess I just did want you to know again that the range that we gave you completely considered the concerns you heard today from Denise and the judge, so that we could fully say to you it's still about a $5 million difference. But if the convenient parking thing is something you feel like we can't quite provide, or we're going to have to do less convenient, it's not as great a difference. So,
I mentioned this before without any backup or substantiation, but a shuttle bus from various remote parking places that we could do a lot of that for $1 million, even for a really long number of years, to help people who can't get around easily to park down here and get a shuttle bus up there. That would save
that's probably
gobs
the,
and gobs of time.
The most helpful thing that we could have from you all would be your sense on this parking question. Because it was a driver in this cost difference and the struggle that we had in the downtown option. But if you, after hearing today what you've heard, if you feel some other solutions ought to be looked at, we could certainly go down that road. It's a big issue otherwise. But
I guess from what I'm hearing today and also talking to people in the community, the legal community, I think staying downtown, if it can be done reasonably, is the best option. There is something that's brought to the community by the historic presence of the courthouses downtown, and I don't think the parking, which I was a fan of having more parking, but I think the more I hear about the parking issue, the less I am concerned about it. And I do think it can be cured if you really have a problem other ways. I'm not suggesting we necessarily make a decision today, but I'm very strongly leaning toward a downtown option that assuming we could buy the city out at a reasonable price, et cetera. And making certain as we go through the process that we're not over-designing and over-building simply because I guess what I'm hearing is that, that state-of-the-art may not necessarily be what is required in order for the people who are actually doing the job to do their job well. So they may be willing to make, so they may say, well, we really don't need this. And so we may find that, that by working a little closer with them and through this process that we can save money.
And I just very quickly on that, we got to get you some more information because if we ask them to comment, and I won't do it today, on what's the minimum level of security they see anywhere else and how do we compare with it, I think they would tell you that you don't have to be state of the art, but you need to invest some money because you're really way behind.
That's where you spend no money.
I understand too.
And I think that's where we get together with Denise and Judge Higgins.
And that's what we'll do.
And spend a week with them and just kind of, you know, learn about it and work with them for a couple of days and just really understand exactly what they need.
Just want to make sure you understand. Right. We've worked with them for a few days. It's not as if we haven't, but right. we need to do more for sure.
But, you know, originally I was for separating the two courts. But, again, based on what I've heard today, I agree with Dennis. I think we ought to try to find a way to do it on the site, our two sites, and then worry about parking. Either off-site or in addition to on the Levy site or on the back side of that.
I also would like to think that maybe there's an opportunity for the city to want to work with us on parking.
No, I don't either. Good point.
What I started to say was,
things down.
We need a lot more information about how we can get help to stay there. I was talking out of turn, so I didn't hear what you just said, and it may
what
have been
you just
exactly
said is
the
what
same
I said.
Thing. Okay, so I like the still the focus that we do have this option, and I want that to encourage our colleagues over the line to say how much they want us to stay down there and help us with the whole Levy option to develop it the right way.
I think the biggest thing I'm hearing is that a parking structure downtown may not be an absolute, but you're still looking for a solution on parking.
That's true.
To stay downtown, which is something we should talk with the city some about.
Parking is needed, for sure. I mean, it is. No matter what you decide on, it is needed.
I have a stupid question. If we were to do the moving general district to the Levy, would we have to buy the city out of any part of that property, or do we already own that?
No, we have to buy
that. So that's
own
another
half
important
of it,
element.
So we'd have to
we
own
have
all
to,
of it.
That has to be sort of squared away first almost before we even know whether we can have that as an option.
That would be part of the discussions with the city.
Thank you.
Yeah. I think we've gotten some good direction, and we can take a lot from today and come back to you. We will be engaging some more with court folks. Obviously, they'd like to stay downtown. We'll be looking at that and considering any other operational issues that they might have if something should change on that. But the real process of getting involved with them so we don't have change orders, we have not even begun to begin because we haven't
future.
Started the
Absolutely.
Design process at all. So we will certainly be doing more of that. So
that is the hazard of preliminary discussions, but we have to do it. It's just part of the rite of passage to get the right answer in the end is that we have to struggle through all this stuff.
If we hadn't seriously taken under consideration their concerns, we probably wouldn't have given you the range that we did, but at least it helped us further this discussion today, so it's helpful.
Well, it's only been, what, 12 years since we started on it?
Yeah, the original one, yeah.
We're right on schedule.
I'm
That's
serious.
Okay, we'll be bringing this back to you then in the next couple months with some more analysis and input.
Thank you.
Okay.
Very much.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
I didn't mean we needed to just push the button and panic and do it.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. I think, and please correct me if I forget.